for.
Bring everything out closer to the people.
We got to stop it, brother. Let's get together and unify.
Radio Basics.
And there's always a message involved.
You're listening to Radio Basic CHRY 105.5 FM. This is Kabir here in the studio with Steve. We're going to have a good show for you today. As you may have heard, there the 473 Tamil refugees that landed, the 492, sorry, Tamil refugees that landed in Vancouver nearly a month ago continue to face detention and harassment at the hands of the Canadian Border Security Agency. And most recently, and quite frighteningly, documents involving the names of dozens of these refugees have been stolen in a break-in at the Canadian Tamil Congress headquarters. This happened just last weekend. We're going to have an update on that. We're going to be talking to David Pupulapile, who is the president of the Canadian Tamil Congress. A little bit later in the show, we're going to be having on Diop Olugbala. He's the president of the International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement in the States. He was up here just this past weekend at the third annual Justice for Awi basketball tournament down in Pelham Park. He was here speaking about his case. He's just been charged for assault on a police officer, a completely ridiculous claim. He was the one that was assaulted, and his sentencing is going to be taking place a little bit later on in October. We're going to be having him on talking about his case, his experiences up here in Toronto, what he thought about the city, what he thought about the organizing that's going on here, as well as some of the campaigns, the survivor programs, the anti-police brutality programs that are being implemented in Philadelphia, where he's based out of right now. And hopefully we can take some inspiration from the movements that are going on there in the States. That's going to be Radio Basics for today. But first, international and local headlines. BP, British Petroleum, has put out a notice, essentially, that they have now permanently sealed the ruptured Gulf of Mexico well that has led to the worst oil spill in U.S. history. On Sunday, the Coast Guard announced that the completion of a relief well that will prevent any chance of a future spill. The well has been sealed since mid-July, but could not be declared dead until the relief well was installed. 11 workers were killed in the April 20th blast that tore open the well, and some 206 million gallons of oil have spewed into the Gulf. In Iraq, at least 56 people have died on Sunday in a string of attacks, including a suicide bomber strike in Fallujah. More than 100 people were wounded. This is Iraq's worst day of violence since the U.S. supposedly has declared the nominal end of occupation operations earlier this month. However, a number of U.S. occupation troops continue to remain in the country. 17 people were killed in Afghanistan as parliamentary elections were held. 7 of those 17 that were killed were, in fact, the result of NATO bombings. The U.S.-led NATO force bombed a village in northwest Afghanistan on Sunday. They claim that all the 7 dead were Taliban militants, but local residents say at least some, if not all of the dead, were unarmed civilians. One man said that he had just helped an elderly victim cast his vote in the elections earlier this day. earlier that day. In local news, on Monday, the inquest into the police murder of Byron de Bassige, it started today. Byron, if people remember, this was a 28-year-old indigenous man suffering from schizophrenia. He was shot to death by police, shot at least four times back in April of 2008. Byron de Bassige was, in fact, stopped initially for stealing two lemons from a convenience store. Police were called, and later on he was found supposedly singing to himself in a park, and it was claimed that he had a knife on him, and the police proceeded to shoot him a number of times. Witnesses, however, report that Byron was neither threatening anybody nor making any threatening motions towards the police, and was in fact in a very calm state of mind. The police shot him not once but several times, and Byron's family has raised several questions as to the nature of that shooting. What we know about the nature of Toronto police, a police force that has been responsible for a number of murders over the years. Most recently, in fact, another schizophrenic man who was killed just in late August down in Victoria Park, who was fleeing, in fact, a TTC car, and under similar circumstances, police claiming that he had a knife on him, was shot several times. And once again, witnesses reporting that police simply opened fire on him, that police shot him in the back, that police shot him, nearly all reports indicating police shot him while he was standing, and then once again after he was already on the ground. And this was a black man, an African man, who was killed in late August, a schizophrenic man in Victoria Park. So obviously the Toronto police have a history not only of violence towards racialized people and indigenous people such as Byron, such as the young man that was killed in August, and I apologize for not having the name up. I will mention that later in the show. Junior Manon, who people remember was killed, was beaten to death back in May, this past May, beaten to death on New York University campus, in fact, just a few minutes walk from where I'm broadcasting right now, simply beaten to death brutally by a group of up to 5 to 7 police officers. And once again, he was not armed either. So we have this history of violence that's recurring, and yet police officers want us to take their word that Byron's murder was justified. So an inquest is starting this Monday. Personally, as a member of the Justice for Albie campaign, we've been a part of a number of inquests that have taken place into police shootings. Dwayne Christian, who was a young man, 14 years old, who was gunned to death, also unarmed, gunned to death in Scarborough. This was back in 2006. There was the inquest into his murder. The police were found completely innocent on all charges, even though an inquest cannot charge a police officer. There was no, not really any recommendations that came forward. The inquest into the death of Alwi al-Nadir, which the Justice for Alwi campaign, of course, was present for almost every day of that inquest, was absolutely ridiculous in the way police officers were treated. Police officers were caught lying on the stand, and yet the result of that inquest was, you know, very little recommendations, very little coming out of that. So people should not really have any high expectations of this inquest into Byron. We definitely encourage everyone else and everyone listening to go out to support the family and to be there and to witness this travesty of justice, which is sure to take place. But the solution to these issues, the solution to people being murdered by police, the solution to racialized people, people with mental illness having this recurring problem of being brutalized and even murdered by the Toronto Police Department, is to organize, is to mobilize in our communities around this, and not simply rely on the justice system, which we know has failed people in Toronto time and time again. That's it for local and international headlines. We're going to be going to a quick track, and we're going to be going to commercials, and then we're going to be coming back with David Pupulapile of the Canadian Tamil Congress. Stay tuned, Radio Basics, CHRY.
I am happy to join with you today in what will go down in history as the greatest demonstration for freedom in the history of our nation.
Then the whole world should begin by ending spending on nuclear arms. A world split on views between Christians, Hindus, Jews, and Islam is run purely by greed and commerce. Terror is emboldened by states today than any time in history. Again, the answer's too clear. It ain't no mystery. We need nuclear thinkers that can act as the pain lingers. The third world needs helping hands, but instead gets trigger fingers.
Then the whole world will be mine if there was no country for me. Fighting for freedom long time.
My people still suffering while they always in depression. I'll tell you why, cause we've all been through struggle. When your family's taken away and you feel your heart crumble. Fighting for our land with no choice, we had to smuggle ourselves and take our loved ones to a place with no trouble. Seeing so much pain, our hearts became so humble. We spread our voices for the ones in constant fear, hoping one day that this world will disappear. Minds are traumatized and we feel that death is near. Please tell me, God, why are all these enemies here? All these lives taken away, all these homes I see destructed. Mothers taken away, all these infants in corruption. So we've grown with war noises, for our people have no choices. But to fight back these explosions, left with scared, crying voices. For my Tamils, love your country, always fight back these forces.
Then the whole world will be mine, if there was no country for me. Fighting for freedom long time.
Blood type patriotic, panic in their eyes, thinking we're schizophrenic. Seize them, don't let them fight for freedom. Beat them, do what you can to mistreat them. Steal them, cause their rights they can't keep them. This is why we fight till we defeat them. Pull out the lead, leave the army in bloodshed. Now I regret with these thoughts in my head. Were they there to help or take our wealth? The pain we felt, so we killed ourselves. The dead reincarnated who've been through hell. Their souls haunt every country who gave no hell. Look at my country through my tiger eyes. Faith passes by when we bite on cyanide. This is why we commit suicide. Fighting for freedom, yo, it's do or die.
Then the whole world will be mine if there was no country for me. Fighting for freedom long time.
A vicious conviction for corrosive tarred, scarred, engaged in a hostile war. Apprehension of lies, failures and global ties. The mass hatred of a noble rise. The path laced with landmines. The evil confines that class women as concubines. Resentment, anger, intentions, a clause of redemption. Armageddon, armed, I'm heading with a directive through the fake gates of perception. Explosions and misconceptions. Mass graves, massacres and masquerades. Mass charades plagued by cash and fame. Political reign, invisible restraint. Pitiful claims in exchange for economic trade. The sinister gains of the world's mastered brains. Leads way to the creation of bins, Hitlers and Husseins. Gandhis, Mandelas and Shays. Righteousness put to a face. A dark rapport is wisdom shot through the mic's rattle. The art of war is seldom forgotten in the heat of the battle.
Then the whole world will be mine if there was no country for me. Fighting for freedom long time. This life still ignoring me. Then the whole world will be mine if there was no country for me. Fighting for freedom long time. This life still ignoring me.
Tell me why time is still asking for refugee status. So then, ever since this world was born, no country for us. Even them animals have them own place and them bird them have them own nest. But when Tamils want them homeland, them try to destroy us. Oh yes, no wonder why the real Tamils turn into Tamil tiger. Do you wonder why the real Tamils turn into Tamil tiger?
You're listening to CHRY 105.5 FM.
Radio Basics, we're back. This is your other host for tonight, Steve De Silva. I'm here with Kabir Joshi Vijay, and we got an interview coming up with somebody from the Canadian Tamil Congress speaking on recent events that have transpired, including the theft of important documents from their office, the break and enter into their office under very suspicious circumstances. We also, later on in the show, we're going to be talking with Diop Olugbala, who was up here in Toronto for the basketball tournament held by the Justice Rowe Campaign Against Police Brutality, their annual basketball tournament against police brutality. Stay tuned with Radio Basics. We'll be back in a minute.
It's an ode, I admit it here. The city code is lock and load. Any minute it's rock and roll, and you rock and roll. And feel your soul leaving. It's just the wrong dance that'll leave you not breathing. I'm not particularly proud of this predicament, but I'm born and bred in this tenement. I'm sentimental, what? Plus, it's only right to represent my hood and whatnot. So I'm about to do it in the music, in the movies cut. Chase pan across to the face, I'm right there. Freeze frame on the street name. Oops, wait a minute, this is where the streets have no name. In the drain of sewage, you can see it in this boy. How the hate is brewing, cause when his tummy tucks in, it's fluid. So what difference does it make, entertaining through it? Some get high, mixing coke and gunpowder, sniffing. She got a gun, but could have been a model or a physician. So what you know about the pirates terrorizing the ocean? You never know what's in the day without a big commotion. It can't be healthy just to live with such a steep emotion. And when I try and sleep, I see coffins closing. So what you know about the pirates terrorizing the ocean? You never know what's in the day without a big commotion. It can't be healthy just to live with such a steep emotion. And when I try and sleep, I see coffins closing. Yeah, yeah. We used to take barbed wire, mold them around discarded bike tires, roll them down the hill on foot blazing. Now that was our version of mountain bike racing. Damn! Do you see why it's amazing when someone comes out of such a dire situation and learns the English language just to share his observation? Probably get a Grammy without a grammar education. So fuck you schooling, fuck you immigration, and all of you who thought I wouldn't amount to constipation. And now I'm here without the slightest fear and reservation. They love me in the slums and their native reservations. The world is a ghetto administering deprivation. But mommy didn't raise no fool, did she, Hoyo? I promised I would get it and remain strictly loyal. Cause when they get it, then they let it all switch and spoil. But I just illuminated it like kitchen foil. A lot of Main Street and Mrs. yapping about yapping. A lot of underground niggas is rapping about rapping. I just wanna tell you what's really crackin' lackin'. Before the tears came down, this is what happened. So what you know about the pirates terrorize the ocean? You never know what's in the day without a big commotion. It can't be healthy just to live with such a steep emotion. And when I try and sleep, I see coffins closing. So what you know about the pirates terrorize the ocean? You never know what's in the day without a big commotion. It can't be healthy just to live with such a steep emotion. And when I try and sleep, I see coffins closing.
Tamil Latagam, Matangum Varayil, Namadangamatum. Ah, இது என்ன கொடுமை தலையில்லாமல் தமிழன் குழந்தை தம்பி தங்கைக்கு கை கால் இல்லை தமிழனுக்கு ஏன் இந்த நிலைமை எழுந்து வாரும் நம்மால் முடியும் துணிந்து வாரும் துயரம் துடையும் அடக்கு முறையும் அடிமைத்தனமும் அகதி வாழ்க்கை அழியும் வரைக்கும் அடங்க மாட்டோம் அடங்க மாட்டோம் நாம் அடங்க மாட்டோம் தமிழில் தாகம் அடங்கும் வரையில் நாம் அடங்க மாட்டோம் அடங்க மாட்டோம் அடங்க மாட்டோம் நாம் அடங்க மாட்டோம் தமிழில் தாகம் அடங்கும் வரையில் நாம் அடங்க மாட்டோம் தமிழன் இல்லாத நாடொன்றில்லை ஏன் நமக்கு நாடொன்றில்லை தாய் நாட்டில் கூட.
You're listening to Radio Basics, CHRY 105.5 FM. We're back. We were having some trouble reaching David Pupulapile, who's the president of the Canadian Tamil Congress. And so we're going to be bringing on Diab Ogubala. We're going to be having him on towards the end of the hour, but it's just as good right now. Hey, Diab, what's going on? You're there?
Uhuru, yes, sir.
Hey,
brother, how you doing?
I'm doing great, man. Good to hear your voice. I hope everything was good. The flight back was good, and everything's going well in Philly right now.
As well can be, considering that Philly is waging a war against the black community, but I was main and things are good, and we are building.
Most definitely. Diab Ogubala, for those that don't know, and hopefully most Radio Basic listeners will already know who we're speaking to, is the president of the International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement, an organization that is really one of the leading revolutionary forces in the imperialist world right now, in the first world right now, in any first world country, is one of the leading revolutionary forces, one of the leading revolutionary forces in the United States that's organizing the African community around a number of different issues. In Philadelphia right now, they have a number of different campaigns, one of which led to Diop now facing a conviction from the U.S. government on a charge of assault on a police officer, aggravated assault on a police officer. This happened on Tuesday, August 24th, was when he was convicted. Just another example of really U.S. imperialism showing its desperation in the face of popular mobilization and resistance. Diop was also here just this past Saturday as part of Justice for Aoi's third annual basketball tournament against police brutality. He was down in Pelham Park, which for those of you that don't know, an area of social housing in downtown Toronto, community that has been faced with many of the same issues that are going on in Philadelphia and any other community throughout the United States and Canada, where there's a large number of racialized people, whether they be African, Latino, Indigenous, South Asian. He gave an incredible speech there that really mobilized people, and gave us a lot of hope and in the struggle that we're facing here, to know that there are experienced and honorable comrades that are continuing that struggle south of the border. So thanks so much for coming up this Saturday, Diop, and it's good to have you on the show, man.
It's great to be here, comrade. I'm honored to be on the show.
So can you start off by telling us about the incident of resistance in which you, in fact, were choked, were assaulted? I mean, I saw the videotape, the video of that incident is out there on Uhuru News website. Talk a little bit about the incident that precipitated this ridiculous charge of aggravated assault on yourself.
Yeah, so on March 19th, 2009, actually, the mayor of Philadelphia, an African was holding a special city council hearing to announce the city's 2010 budget. And the thing is that in this this whole period, there was a lot of controversy around the city's budget, how it would be spending its the resources. And the mayor claimed that there was a budget crisis that the city was experiencing at the time that he used as a justification to impose budget cuts on essential services that the community relies on to survive, things like after-school programs, certain child care programs, health care, et cetera. And so there was mass opposition to the city, the proposed budget cut. And this particular city council meeting in which we were raising a protest, you know, we united with other forces and their demand for an end to the budget cuts. But we were also there to expose the fact that the resources that the city does have is being spent on all-out war on against African community. In fact, while the mayor claimed that the city was experiencing these this budget crisis, he was spending over $1.1 billion on police and prison. So we found it hard to believe that the city was experiencing any real economic crisis while it has $1 billion to spend on police. So we wanted to expose that, and we went into that city council meeting prepared to protest what we refer to as Nutter's war budget. We held up signs during the city council meetings, and as a consequence of this, I was attacked. The police literally put me in a chokehold and wrestled me down to the ground before putting me in handcuffs and dragging me to jail.
And these were Philadelphia city cops, or were they like specific security guards in the city hall building? But these were actually Philadelphia police officers.
Yeah, these were actual Philadelphia police officers. There's a special police unit in the Philadelphia Police Department known as Civil Affairs, and their main assignment is to police, public events, high profile events, especially events that public officials would attend. So this was a particular unit that attacked me, but they are part of the Philadelphia Police Department.
And were you arrested? So talk about the charges that were leveled against you. Was the arrest, did the arrest take place that day, or were these charges something that explain this process that leading up to the conviction and also the sentencing that's going to be taking place on October 13th?
Yes, so, I was charged the same day I was arrested and charged with aggravated assault, which is a felony, along with a myriad of other misdemeanor charges. And immediately, the UNITA movement, we mobilized our forces and our supporters and allies, including BASIC, around the world to, call into the Philadelphia City Hall and the police department demanding my immediate release, as well as my co-defendant, Shabaka Mambata, who also was attacked during this process. At our preliminary hearing, due to the political pressure that we put on the city, the judge actually dropped the felony charges and just had misdemeanors remain on the case. So we consider this to be a victory. But soon after that, our bubble was burst. We got notice that the district attorney had decided that they wanted to challenge the judge's decision to drop the felony on my case. They allowed for Comrade Shabaka to go free with just a misdemeanor, but they chose to target me and make sure that the felonies would be reimposed on my case. And so after that, we went through a series of courtroom struggles and hearings. And we really stormed the Philadelphia. We had forces calling in from around the world. We held militant demonstrations outside the courthouse demanding, my immediate release. And this political pressure led to two judges recusing themselves. They actually removed themselves from the case. Both of them stating that the case was too political for them to get involved with, and they don't want to have anything to do with it. So the case of Diop Olugbala versus the city of Philadelphia was considered in the judge's circus to be hands-off. But the city did manage to find an up-and-coming neo-colonial judge who was willing to do whatever it takes to, ascend in the ladder of the colonial court system. And so her name was Renee Cardwell Hughes. So they finally found this woman who was a judge to take my case, and she carried out their assignment to put the felonies back on to a T. In fact, during the hearing with Renee Cardwell Hughes, she demanded that everybody who came to the hearing in my support submit, give up their driver's license or some form of government ID, which is against, U.S. constitutional law. But she didn't give a damn about the law. She made everybody give up their ID. And in fact, we're in the process of filing a lawsuit with the ACLU against the courts for this. But the point is that the city managed to reimpose the felony charge on me. And so I went into my trial with not only misdemeanor charges, but felony charge as well. And so, we held, we raised a real strong and fierce struggle to ensure my freedom. And on Tuesday, August 24th, we had the trial where a judge by the name of Roxanne Covington, another African woman, was presiding over the case. And after hearing the police lie on the witness stand, she decided to rule in their favor. And so I've been convicted, found guilty by the city of Philadelphia of attacking a police officer when, in fact, I was attacked. But we know that it's a political case. It's always been from day one. And we are moving forward in the struggle to still have these charges dropped and to have the court system turn the verdict around. So we are pursuing some legal recourse that we have the option of doing, and that's what we're doing right now.
Definitely.
But most importantly, I just want to say that we will be holding International Day of Resistance on the day of my sentencing, which is on October 13th, where we're going to be having forces from all over the world hold demonstrations outside of the U.S. Embassy demanding justice for Diop Olubala. Charges dropped, no sentence. And I know that we're going to be doing something similar in Toronto, Canada.
Definitely. There is going to be actions in Toronto on that day, October 13th. There is a Free Diop committee that is forming right here in the city, and there will be most definitely actions of that Radio Basics will let listeners know about in relation to Diop's case, as well as the cases of all the Africans and other racialized people that have been murdered both in this city and in the United States throughout the years. And as I understand, in fact, this same judge that sentenced you, the one that you know, that was willing to go to these lengths to you know, put forward this ridiculous charge, essentially placing you as a persecuting you politically. As I understand, she's the one that kind of came out and said that she wants Mumia to be executed. That's the kind of mindset that this judge is operating with.
Yeah. And I'm not aware of that particular statement, though I'm not surprised. I know that the DA, District Attorney Seth Williams, who was responsible for, you know, prosecuting me, he has made that statement. Oh.
Yes, I apologize. It was the district attorney I was thinking of. Yeah,
but I wouldn't be surprised if the judge said the same thing, you know, based on the way she ruled in my case.
Definitely. So, Diab, let's talk a little bit more about when you're talking about the initial reasons for your conviction in the first place, which was intervening at the City Hall meeting where they were essentially announcing these new wave of attacks on the African community in Philadelphia. Talk to us a little bit about the conditions that are faced by, you know, the majority of Africans in Philadelphia right now, which I'm sure a lot of people in Toronto can, you know, we're here right here in the Jane and Finch area, broadcasting from the Jane and Finch area. A lot of people can relate to here in the city, as well as some of the campaigns and the mobilizations in PDOM is in the process of moving around in response to those conditions and in response to the violence, the political, the economic, the physical violence that the city of Philadelphia is launching against the African community there.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I missed that the last part of what you said. I had a bad connection.
Yeah, just to talk about the campaigns that MPDOM is putting forward in response to these attacks on the African community, the survival programs, whatever campaigns you have running right now in the city.
Yes. Well, one thing we have going on is the People's Law School, which is essentially a regular workshop that we hold for the community where we have a panel of lawyers provide free legal advice for the people who's caught up in different cases. But, of course, we want to take it beyond just the question of having a good lawyer, because we know that every case, every trial is essentially political. And so we want to win our people to understand that, you know, we have to organize politically for power. And so along with that, we are engaging in the March for Black Justice, which is coming up on the day of my sentencing, October 13th. And the March for Black Justice is being used to organize the entire community to stand up against the city of Philadelphia, especially the court system, for its anti-African, profit-driven policies. And I'm sure that some of y'all in Toronto are familiar with the case of Askia Sabor, this African man who a couple of weeks ago was beaten like Rodney King on in front of cameras, and you know that kind of spread throughout YouTube and international media. And but the fact is that that's just, you know, an everyday occurrence in our communities around the world. And we want for our people to have organizational, you know, the ability to actually organize for resistance. So we're having people fill out what we call the Black Fist Form. FIST being an acronym for Formal Investigation Script of Testimony. And with this form, people will come forward with their stories, their complaints, their charges against the city, however they may have been attacked or however their rights may have been violated. And all of the forms that are filled out in the community will serve as evidence that we're using in a community-controlled investigation of the city of Philadelphia, particularly the police department as well as the court system. We are organizing a community-controlled process to indict, prosecute, and imprison the criminals who attack our community from the police as well as the court system. So this is our main campaign that we're involved in, which is leading up to the International Convention for NPDOM, which will be held on February 19th and 20th.
Definitely. And to end off, we're going to have to go to commercial soon, but I wanted to get you're talking about these incredible campaigns that you guys are putting forward in Philadelphia. In addition to that, I know when you were over here, you were mentioning the economic you know, development programs that you guys are also putting forward, that, you know, it's ridiculous that you guys as an organization are doing more economic development within the African community than the city of Philadelphia. But yeah, you know, the store, the community owned businesses and stores that you guys also have in operation there. But I want to end off with just, you were here in the city this past weekend as part of the basketball tournament, which is an annual event against police brutality. You were out there in the community, and you know, there was a very good, in talking to people since then, you know, and following up with teams and with some of the other organizers, you know, that was an incredible speech that you delivered, and people really felt what you were putting forward. So what was your reaction to come here to Toronto? You've been here before, but you know, what was it like being here, and what message do you have, you know, concluding message do you have for listeners here in Toronto that are, you know, facing a lot of these same issues in Philadelphia, $1 billion police budget right here in Toronto, along with, and at the same time, we have these terrible conditions that are going on for racialized people in the city?
Yeah, I was incredibly encouraged by what I saw there in Toronto, particularly the youthful character of the movement that is building up there. You know, I was impressed with the work of the Justice for Ali Committee to put together the basketball tournament to, you know, draw a bridge between, you know, mass culture and what the people are doing, and to be able to infuse, you know, political action within it and analysis within it. So that was encouraging to me, especially because that was happening amongst the youth. And we know that these attacks by the Canadian government are most intensely, you know, it's really targeting our youth more than anybody. And so, you know, I was really, again, I was encouraged by what I saw. And, you know, the main task before us is to build a worldwide capacity to wage struggles. Because, you know, I know that in Toronto, you know, African people and oppressed people, we may not make up a very sizable population on an international scale, but we have to remember that Africans and Arabs and other oppressed people in Toronto are part of an international community of oppressed people who suffer under the boot of imperialism. And so our task as the UDA movement is to build worldwide organization so that our brothers and sisters who may have traveled.
We apologize. We lost Diop there. We're going to go to a quick commercial break. Yeah, we apologize for that. Unfortunately, we're either going to try to get him back on, or we're going to be coming back with David Puplapile of the Canadian Tamil Congress. Stay tuned, Radio Basics. CHRY, that was Diop Ogubala of the International Democratic People's Uhuru Movement. We apologize once again. Stay tuned.
Hey, I can't find nothing on the radio.
CHRY.
Yo, turn to that station.
105.5 FM. Yeah, One Enterprises, Viper Records, possess the care, immortal technique, and this is treason, if,
I'm not down with the cut, his rap, or the Sambos. My flow is cancerous, his milk like Monsanto. Sold to the hood, in a package of murder. I'm like white people, get fired, I'm back with a burner. Gauge 570 with the infrared beams. So off the crew clucks and the combat 18. I put bullets in the spleen, sending you to the grave. And through all that, my mother, I'm still get paid. And cause of that, some digging can't stand me, man. But that's the curse of the slave like Candyman. House digging that traitor they sold to get ahead. And the puff don't face and they faith in the feds. While the government talk about a mission to Mars, they leave the hood stuck in a position to starve. Capitalism's a religion that makes Satan a god and teaches self-righteous people to embrace a facade. Business, the way that we live, born in the hood, try to see a better life for the kids. It ain't going to make money, but get on legal, on the streets, or you turn your back on your people. It's a cutthroat business, the way that we live, born in the hood, try to see a better life for the kids. It ain't going to make money, but get on legal, on the streets, or you turn your back on your people. They be manipulating politicians, delegating tasks and perpetrating sound like Satan, making racist statements of abomination. The invaders start forsaken, waiting for that force to save them instead of saving. Moving destination, property papers, waiting on your 40 acres till you owe the ages, full of aching while the hole is gaping. To case to make your way in, I pray to God with all the aimings in the world and never make it aim when famous celebrity could fall off like leprosy, they telling me. So I pay attention, bump the envy and the jealousy. I do envy save, but here's the latest phrase. Find me killing all the source pain. Fan base is fair race, complete with shorties that play. Be revered in my old age, so ripping the stage. And even in from above when I wave, throwing flowers on my grave, burning stage, saying thanks, hey, who made waves for freeing the slaves.
Hello, you're listening to Radio Basic CHRY 105.5 FM. Since January 2009, the Sri Lankan state has launched a full-out Holocaust on its minority Tamil population. This began with a five-month indiscriminate shelling and bombing campaign of the North Coast, home to a majority of Tamils, and included a deliberate targeting of safe zones, hospitals, and schools. The bloody outcome was the death of over 20,000 Tamil civilians and the decimation of the Tamil Tiger National Liberation Movement. Civilians that survived the government onslaught have now been forced into detention, and some 300,000 internally displaced persons remain imprisoned in state-run concentration camps. And there is a continuing and recurring issue of complete denial of basic services, limited accessibility to water, food, and other essential supplies. And any news leaving the camps continues to report systematic rape, torture, murder, beatings, forced abortions, and even child trafficking by the Sri Lankan army. With death rates in the camps a few months ago was reported to be an estimated 1,400 per week. So on October 16th of last year, when 76 exhausted and desperate Tamil men were intercepted by Canadian authorities on a rusty freighter off the BC coast, there really should have been no doubt as to why they have fled to Canada. But rather than treating these refugees as victims of genocide and survivors of one of the most violent regimes in the world today, Canadian Border Services tossed all the 76 men back into detention. Now, less than a month ago, when some 492 Tamil men, women, and children arrived on the coast of Vancouver, the same horrific process has been repeated, where the vast majority of these refugees continue to languish in detention centers after their boat was intercepted by RCMP Border Services and armed forces. We have on the line with us right now David Pupulapile of the Canadian Tamil Congress, an organization which does a wonderful job and a commendable job of representing the voices of the Tamil community here in Canada. David, thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you for having me, Kubir.
Definitely. So can you start off by telling us...
Yes, you mentioned about the 76 people. They were detained initially, but all of them were released now.
Yes, by January they were all released.
Right, yeah. The recent ship, migrants, altogether 492 heads, And a few of them got released early part of this week and later part of this week as well. Four women, out of them, five actually in total. Four are with kids, and one of them is a single woman. They're all released, and they've been living in Vancouver ever since. They've been taken care of by Vancouver Tamil community. And we hope many more released to follow. And I want to admit one thing. The initial process when they were detained was a little tough. But after that, they're being looked after well by our correctional services people in Vancouver and the mainland area. And the only thing is, whatever said and done, detention is detention. And these people have gone through, as you put it, they have gone through a lot during their lifetime back in Sri Lanka. And they escaped the hostile conditions, persecution at the hands of Sri Lankan authorities. And after a very horrific journey, very horrendous, very dangerous journey, they put their life in enormous risk and reached our shores asking for asylum. And when they're being detained, their minds, especially the physically, they're being looked after well, but the emotional needs are not met that much. So that disturbed them. And we hope every one of them would be released in the coming months and weeks, in the coming weeks and months. Having said that, our request to our government is one and only thing. Put them through due process and listen to them. There are 492 stories out there. Listen each and every story and make your decision based upon what you are listening from them. That's it.
Definitely. So as of now, it's like 380 men that are still in prison out of the 492.
That's right, yeah.
And some 63 women. As of now, it's just a matter of, or according to the government, it's just a matter of going through these, each
identity,
one of the individual
there are
cases.
Two things here, they are very much concerned. The first and foremost are the identities. Are they really bona fide Tamils from the island of Sri Lanka? Second thing is, are they... is any one of them, or do they possess any security threat to the country? That mean our country, Canada. Are they national security threat to our country? So the government goes case by case, and as I said, they started releasing people.
Definitely,
it's slow though.
Most definitely, and especially for people who have just come from,
going through horrific conditions.
Exactly. Let's talk a little bit. I mentioned about in the introduction, but can you give any more additional information about the conditions as they stand right now in Sri Lanka?
Initially, they detained 300,000 people, and the funny thing is, these 300,000 people, when the armed forces went to release them, liberate them. That's what they're saying. We are fighting to liberate these souls from the clutches of the tigers. But soon after they liberated these people, they jailed them. Sri Lanka is the only country who liberated a population and jailed them the next day. And now, because of the pressure from the international community, including our country, most of the folks have been released from these initial camps, and some of them are taken to secondary camps. And I hear that some 35,000-40,000 are still in camps, maybe more. But the conditions, whether they are in the camps or whether they have been released from the camps, the conditions remain the same. Very hostile conditions. The basic needs are not, it remains the same. Their houses are not, not ready for them to go and live. It's very inhabitable, and not much of government assistance, because government destroyed all of these houses through bombing and shelling and everything. But they're very much reluctant to build the houses, saying that they don't have money, and they're asking money from international community. But I want to ask you something. If somebody deliberately destroys something, why should we lend money to build them?
Exactly.
So if government wants the houses to be built, allow the international community without any restriction, without any bias, let them go and do the job. On the contrary, Kabir, they put heavy conditions, very, very stringent conditions on the international NGOs such as Red Cross, World Vision, and Doctors Without Borders. Everybody has through a very strong process from the government of Sri Lanka. They curtail most of the activities. Mm. And on top of that, they don't allow the international media to go and visit this area. When international media goes, they have to get the permission from the Sri Lanka. They go through lots of procedure. Yes. In other words, they don't want the international media to go there and go around freely and report from the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's another thing that we have been saying, that what is there to hide? They are hiding something.
Mm.
But biggest thing of all of this, the last phase of the war, what you mentioned, everything, reputable human rights organizations such as Human Rights Watch, Amnesty International, they have documented with evidences many, many, many war crimes that have been committed against Tamils during the phase of war. So these organizations, along with diaspora, plus the some international committee members also started joining the bandwagon. We pressured and pressured and pressured the Sri Lankan government, especially the UN, I would say, to come with some sort of panel to investigate those claims. Because in Sri Lanka, mm-hmm. our experience, anyone who has some ties with Sri Lanka, the country is Sri Lanka,
mm-hmm.
We clearly know that no commission that's been appointed by the Sri Lankan government will bring any results.
Exactly.
That year after year after year, they have appointed commissions after commissions after commissions. Nothing worked. Mm-hmm. And few years back, our government, the Canadian government, along with the American government and other governments, they said, okay, you can't run a commission. You don't know how to run a commission. You don't know how to put up the commission and make the commission to work. We will give some experts.
Mm.
And also money to advise you to formulate the commission and make sure how this commission works. We will come and teach you. Mm. So our experts, one of the experts from our country is Professor Bruce Matthews, who is from Nova Scotia. He went, there's an expert from America. There were about 15 experts went all over the world, headed by former Chief Justice of India, Mr. Justice Bhagavati.
Mm.
They were there for about a year or so. They got fed up. They said, no matter what you try to teach them, they're not going to listen. So they said, we can't teach these people because they're not listening. So they left. They left with disgust. This is the history of Sri Lanka. So the international committee said, nothing is going to work, so let's go with an international investigation, international panel.
Unfortunately, David, we have to. I apologize. This is very important information that's going out. We have to wrap up because the next show is going to be coming on. But I just wanted to conclude with this disturbing news. You know, there's hope in the sense that the Canadian Tamil Congress organizations, like Known as Illegal, are doing a very good job of mobilizing towards, making sure that these refugees, these 400 some refugees, are treated well, that their rights are met, and that the due process is being followed.
And the war crime should be investigated in Sri Lanka by UN panel.
Most definitely. Can you mention about the incident very briefly that took place?
UN finally appointed a panel. I'll go a little faster here. So Sri Lanka adamantly refusing the war panel, refusing the entry to the war panel. Now the migrants who have come to Canada, they say that they have witnessed these crimes. They are ready to witness anywhere at any time, in front of anybody. Mm. So we are appealing to our government and our international community to get these war witnesses who have been living, who have come out of Sri Lanka, and go and, you know, witness in front of this war crimes panel and come to some conclusion, put Sri Lanka on the dock.
Definitely. So now, so very briefly, we have to end off right away. But what took place this past weekend with the
people are getting released batch by batch now. We hope, because the sheer number, it takes a while. But finally, things started rolling.
Yes, I'm speaking in regards to the documents that were stolen from the.
You mean us? Yeah.
Yes.
Some unidentified people who we don't know who. I mean, these are rogue elements who had come and broken our door and entered forcibly and took away a computer and a couple of monitors, three monitors.
Mm-hmm.
Initially, we feared they must have got away with some information, you know, very delicate information,
yeah.
Finally, but when we brought our computer experts who have designed this computer system here and the people who set up the system, we were told not to worry because whatever they took from the office is nothing much, just very few little things. So that's where we stand. And matters before the police, Toronto police, we have faith with the Toronto police officials. We want the police officials to go to the bottom of it and find the culprits and bring them in front of the justice.
Most definitely. And this is, yeah, for sure, this was troubling news. I remember you, there was a statement put out that you thought the names of the hundreds had been
That's right. No, that's not the case, though.
Definitely. So, David, thank you. We want to thank you so much for coming on. It's an honor to have you on the show. And we will definitely keep updated on this very this case that really concerns us of these 492 refugees, men, women, and children that have now landed in Canada. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you very
on
much. Thank you for having me on this show.
Most definitely.
Okay. Bye now.
Goodbye. That was David Pupulapile, president of the Canadian Tamil Congress, talking about the 492 Tamil refugees, many of which, the vast majority of which, remain in detention by the Canadian government. Thank you, Radio Basic, CHRY. We're out. We apologize for cutting into the time here, but and please stay tuned for...
Every day we have the blues.
Thank you. Radio Basic, CHRY, Kabir, we're out.